This is Xane Anderson, and welcome to the Principal Podcast today. Today, I have Roy Osing on our show today. He's a guy who took a startup internet company to $1 billion in sales. 1 billion with a B. He says that he is the only author, entrepreneur, and executive leader who delivers practical and proven audacious, unheard of ways to produce high-performing businesses and successful careers. He's an accomplished business advisor. He's the author of a no-nonsense book, Be Different or Be Dead, with the audacious, unheard of ways that took a startup to $1 billion in sales. Roy, thank you for being on the show today.
Absolutely my pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So tell us a little bit about this. Let's get right into this. When we talk about $1 billion in sales, going from a startup to $1 billion, I mean, what'd you do? Can you give us a little bit of an idea?
To be really detailed here, I mean, it was an early stage data company sitting in a data world or in a telecom world when we were going through deregulation and the introduction of internet protocol technology. And I was asked to basically lead a new division to take this data world and try and maximize the potential we can get from the internet. So we had a bit of a run rate, but not much. And it was in a different space. It was like in a B2B space using high-speed data applications. So this was completely brand new. And so, one of many challenges, as you can appreciate, you're sitting in a regulated telecom world. You have an engineering-dominated workforce. We were order takers. You know, we were highly regulated. We were rule-bound. We had little customer service, and we had to move into this world where in order to survive and thrive, we had to be an intensely competitive, highly competitive, customer-oriented enterprise. And so we simply started. I mean, we gathered an army of advocates. I mean, it occurred to me really early that if we weren't different than everybody else, we were going to have a really, really hard go because we didn't have price and an advantage. And of course, it turns out that was an advantage, not to have price as an advantage. Because it forced us to do the right things. And so my leadership style is I'm a very practical how-to guy, right? My stuff is founded in decent business principles, but it's not textbook, right? It's stuff that I discovered in my journey as a leader that lit fires in people and motivated them to join the journey. And it was a journey of growth. The point I want to make, and the crazy things we did, like hiring for Goosebumps, wasn't done because it was a cool thing to do. It was done because we discovered that it lit fires, improved execution, and kept us going on the run rate up to $1 billion in revenue. And so to make a long story short, transformation industry, we had to change the culture. We had to be different. We had to discover practical things that people love to do. Okay, and it turned out that they weren't textbook based because that stuff never worked. And we just worked our asses off. And because everybody, we had an army of advocates. We had an army of believers, right, in this journey. And it was remarkable. Man, I get goosebumps. I got them right now. I just get them thinking about what this team of people, and I still have people today. And I'm older now. I can go into a mall and I will run into somebody that used to be in my customer service organization, walk up to me and say, "Hey, Roy," actually they didn't. "Hey, Mr. Osing, how are you? It's so nice to see you." And I go, "Oh, are you kidding me? Do you want this older person to absolutely collapse right into this puddle of emotion?" I mean, I still have that. And that's nothing more than a barometer as to how people felt about the journey we were on.
I love that. Talk a little bit more about this. You said hiring for goosebumps. You say that's not something that's textbook. They don't say if you get goosebumps, you should hire somebody, but you're saying maybe you should. Is that what I'm hearing or no?
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, so we had, of course, the difference between what we did and what a lot of companies today do is they talk about providing memorable customer experiences. We actually delivered them. And one of the things that I struggled with at the time, because we knew we had to provide this amazing level of service, was to how do I hire people who have this natural, innate desire to serve others? Okay, because my logic was, if you have people like that, First of all, you can't train them to like human beings, right? Nobody can train people to like Homo sapiens. You can train them to answer a phone with a smile in your voice, but that's nothing. That's phony as hell. But you can't train anybody to like people. So my reasoning is, well, I got to hire these people. How can I find them? So I came up with this crazy idea that my boss thought I was absolutely out of my mind. That I would, and we interviewed people as a panel. So I'm the president of the company. We're there. I'm there with about three or four of my direct report team. And here's this person, right, applying for a customer service job. So it's pretty intimidating, right? And so we would have a nice conversation. And but the questions weren't oriented exclusively to what are your skills and competencies, and what do you think you're good at? Because I didn't care about that. What I wanted to get at is what is this person like in terms of how they feel about human beings? And so I came up with this notion of goosebumps, and it kind of went like this. I'd ask you, I'd say, okay, so very important question. Do you like people? And so what would happen typically is the person would kind of lean back and they knew that the answer to the question that Roy was expecting was a yes, of course. They just had no idea where I was going with this question, right? So they would say, yeah, of course. Yeah, Mr. Osang, I like people. I said, okay, what I want you to do is I want you to tell me a story. Tell me a story that would show me your love for people. And this is the question that separated the phonies from the people that really had loving people running through their DNA, right? Because the people that kind of said, oops, now I see where this is going, they would contrive a story, right, that they thought I wanted to hear. And of course, it just was cold. It was flat. It left me cold, felt like a fish. And I would just say, well, bye-bye. I didn't care that you had an MBA. I could care less about that. What you did is you showed me, first of all, you bullshitted me. And secondly, you don't like people. Why would I want a person like that, regardless of how many initials they have behind their name in my organization when I'm trying to create a powerhouse of customer service? The people that got it, though, they would tell a story that was rich, rich in emotion, in passion. Their pupils would light up, and some of them actually would, get teary-eyed. I could just see it. And of course, what that did was it just left me with goosebumps. And I thought, what the hell? I've just hit on a major indicator here, right? So the bottom line was I got goosebumps. We hired the person and we taught the person the business. Now, of course, some people criticize, well, so you're going to hire an idiot. And I said, no, look, there's a minimum standard of academics. Okay. But the problem today is that ends up to be 80% of the criteria. And I switched it around.
And sometimes people that education piece might even take out a little bit of that goosebump factor, right? Because there is so much textbook indoctrination that, hey, I think it has to be done a certain way. Sometimes, I mean, and not to say education is a good thing, but I'm saying some types of education might actually work against you for for providing the, hiring for goosebumps factor.
I think you're right. I mean, the problem is everybody talks the same. They look the same, they quote the same resources and sources. And so when I'm looking at a candidate, like my thing is be different. I'm looking for differentiation. I'm looking for somebody that stands out in a way that matters to the organization. And when everybody talks the same, my eyes glaze over and I slip into a coma. Okay, that's just what happens. Okay, but somebody that gets what the organization wants to do and represents themselves as a unique resource to deliver that value, then I'm all ears, man. I will do anything. I will invest tons of money in that person, teach them the business, give them all the support they need because they have the fundamentals. And you don't teach those fundamentals in school.
So let me ask you this. I love this hiring for goosebumps, and I think it is. It's different because some people are saying, let's just look at metrics. Let's just look at tests. Let's just look at personality types or all kinds of things. And sometimes it's just trust your gut and hire for goosebumps, which is different, and it's even audacious. What would you say? I mean, is this one of your secrets for scaling a business, or what would you say are your secrets, if you had some, to scale a business to $1 billion?
Yeah. So I would say there's two pieces to that. The first piece is to simplify and loosen up on strategy. And the second piece is to tighten up on execution. What I mean by that is on the strategy side, we need to get used to getting it just about right. We need to get used to heading west and then learn whether that was the right call through execution, okay, and adjusting it. And I call it planning on the run, adjusting it as you go. Because the problem is, how can you create a perfect plan in an imperfect world? Like, it's insane to even consider that. And yet, 80% of the time that organizations spend on determining the direction for their organization is spent on the strategy. The strategy is worthless, okay, without an execution army of advocates, okay, who have your journey pouring through their veins 24/7, 365. And so scaling starts with a really simple concept that says, how can I build a strategy to execute, which I did. And then, what are the key elements of execution, right, that we can bear down on day in and day out? And so, on the strategy piece, I created, and you and I talked about this in our pre-call, I created this concept called a strategic game plan, which is a way of creating a just about right strategy in 48 hours by answering three questions. The first question is, how big do you want to be? That's a question about top line revenue growth in 24 months, because 5-year plans don't exist. The second question is, who do you want to serve? Where are you going to get the money? What are the key customer groups that have the latent potential to deliver the how big? And what do they crave? Not what do they need. What do they crave? The cravings piece addresses, what emotionally do these people desire? What do they covet? What do they lust for? What do they desire? The reason that's so important is, first of all, nobody plays in that space. Right? So there's no competition. And secondly, it's highly price insensitive because people that buy on emotion aren't really, susceptible to sticker shock when they see the pricing of it, because they're just all in emotionally, right? And the third question is, how are you going to compete and win in those customer groups you've chosen to serve? And to do that, you have to be the only one that does what you do. So I created this concept called the only statement to address the fact that there's no such thing as better, best, number one, market leader. Those are all nonsensical terms that mean absolutely nothing, right? But if you are the only one that does what you do, you stand raw naked in the wind. You can be measured, exposed, and actually you can be seen when you have an only statement, and judged one way or the other. And it's turning out that to be the only ones that do what you do is something that people are now starting to get interested in talking about. Like, I called, you want to be a claptrapper? The claptrapper is the better, best, all academic bullshit, quite frankly, that's out there, because everybody's promulgating it, and customers are going, what? What? Who decides better? Who decides best? Oh, I know, some academic. And they're right. The only one forces you to do what people care about in a unique way. And it's those people that judge you. Nobody else. It's the people that receive the value. They judge whether you're the only one. And so when you put the answer to those three questions together, you have your strategy. Right. So I do that with organizations in 3 days. So in 48 hours, we have that. It's just about right, and people are really nervous about it. They perspire, which is a good thing, right? Because they've never had that done to them before. They're used to spending 6 months doing strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats analysis, competitive threats, by hiring, third parties or subject matter experts. And what I do is I get the executive team in a room and I pull it out of their head and say, we're going to go with this. You guys are accountable. And so that's one element of the strategy, but it's all about simplicity, it's all about focus, and it's all about differentiation using the only statement. So that piece, okay, starts the scaling process. Now, you notice I've not said anything about cost, right? Which is typically where people go in any scaling discussion. Like, how are we going to create platforms to drive unit prices down? I keep saying, what are you talking about? I want to understand where the top line's going. Why would you drive price costs down when you don't even know the framework, the strategic context within which you're building, for God's sake? But they do it anyways. Cost is way down. Once we understand how we're going to architect the revenue line, then we start talking about creating a cost structure that is as low as we can. Because then we achieve real scaling, which is increasing revenues disproportionately more than cost. And people keep forgetting about that definition. That's my definition. So we're really top line focused. And so that was the strategy piece. And yeah, people can't at first they go, what? You mean really? Of course, they're used to getting these, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 quotes to do a strategy, and it's going to take 6 months. And the little old Roy comes along and says, well, give me 2 days for 10 grand. What do you think? Well, the first thing is they don't think I can do it, and it must not be good enough. So I say, fine, give me 50,000. Oh, okay. Jesus.
That's fine. Pay me five times as much.
I mean, whatever.
And you're simply, and to recap, you're saying, the three questions, you're saying, how big do you want to be in 24 months? We're not doing a 5-year plan. We're doing a 24-month plan, right? Who do you want to serve? And I like how you phrased it. What do they crave? Like, what, is, not what do they need? What do they crave? Like, what do they really, really want? And then, how do you compete and win and be the only one? Those are the three basic questions that I heard you say. Is that correct?
That's it, my friend. That's it. And if you can do that, you have enough to get going on. Because now what I want you to do is I want you to pour the coals to execution, because that's where the detail happens, not in the strategy. And so, I say, look, I'm sitting in Vancouver. My plan is going to be to head east. I have no real idea whether I'm going to end up in New York or Chicago or wherever on the East Coast. No idea. Let's just get our feet moving and let's
Yeah.
learn from execution and then tweak it on the run.
I
Simple.
agree. And you learn so much more by getting in and just doing it. And then you learn what you don't know. You don't know what you don't know until you start moving, right? I mean, you can't say, oh, we can plan for every contingency and there might be a bazillion different ones. Let's just go and we'll make it work along the way.
Well, the problem is, we've been taught not to do that. Okay, the academic world has taught us to apply formula that if you can apply a least squares analysis to a set of data, you will be able to with 0.95% accuracy, you'll be able to predict the outcome. And so we believe that. Okay, now I'm not putting that down, okay? But what I'm saying is that's not the complete answer. That's an input. Okay, what you need to do is you need to say, well, yeah, but we're not going to spend any more time on that. We're going to figure it out as we go. If it makes you feel better to get additional data points as a function of time, go ahead, be my guest. But don't wait for all of that stuff, because while you're standing still, the bad guys are eating your lunch. That's it. The people that really get it, they're out there not knowing for sure. They're just doing it, learning from it, and then redoing it. And getting an advantage. And if they happen to be promulgating an only statement, they will eat your lunch because nobody else is doing that. And so you're absolutely right. You got to just do it. A lot of people will say, well, that just sounds way too loosey-goosey. And now these are the people that want structure and rigidity because they've been taught that that's the way to do things. And those are exactly the people that we need to be afraid of. Because they're imposing rules and stuff on us and our behavior and our people's behavior that are founded on principles that aren't based on reality.
Right.
Okay, they're
They're
just not.
fake principle, like stuff that's not real, right?
Yep.
You can say, hey, I believe I can fly. I don't believe in gravity, but if you go to the edge of the cliff and you jump off, gravity still takes over, right?
Yep.
And you can have all your reasons for that the gravity doesn't exist or whatever you want to believe. But the truth is what you believe, your map in your head has got to match up with really what's really there, the actual terrain. And so the way we learn the terrain is just by getting out on the terrain and learning it, seeing it and experiencing it and doing it rather than planning for possible theoretical outcomes all the time.
Well, that's absolutely true. And the other thing that people need to realize is the business world, okay, trying to achieve results is very complicated. To actually believe you can dumb it down and explain it with a multivariate analysis kind of goes to show where your head's at, right? How do you explain internal politics? How do you quantify that? How do you quantify internal bias? How do you do that?
Right. How
How do
many
you
units?
quant?
Yeah. How many units of internal bias are we experiencing at this point? What's the
I mean,
practice?
seriously. I mean, now we're seeing organizations eliminate programs that are costing millions of dollars, like DEI, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not taking a position on that one way or the other. I'm just saying there's an example of something that
Right.
was promulgated to be the savior and salvation to make you not only a worthwhile organization, but a growing one, that people are going to say, huh, well, maybe it's not all that it's cracked up to be. Let's figure out what else we need to do. And that's the responsible thing. But at the time, it was just like tactics, man. Everybody grabs at tactics. Now it's AI, and it was social media, and it's all these other things that describe a bandwagon of tactical things that people are jumping on without having a context. So really, the answer to your scaling question is all about, do you have a strategic context within which every element of your organization, right, performs and is held accountable to perform. And if you don't have that, then you can't talk about scaling anything. All you're doing is what I call chasing yummy incoming. You're just a yummy chaser, which feels good, but it doesn't really achieve anything, right?
Right.
And that's a big problem in most organizations today, unfortunately.
Let's talk a little bit about differentiating. One of the things I like that you said in your 2-day thing you talked about is how do we be the only one, the different. You got to be different or dead. And one of the things that came to mind, I'd love to have your opinion on this. You know, we talk about Elon Musk. He's this controversial figure in many spaces, but he's basically said, you know, the whole shift is changing where people can be the media themselves. In other words, you look at Elon Musk, he's got somewhere around, I want to say 215 million, 16 million followers, somewhere around there. And you have these other organizations that are very careful about how they release press releases, and they have to go through a committee before they get out because they want to make sure that they don't offend anybody. They want to make sure that it's exactly the way. And so before they'll even send a tweet, they have to run it through a series of whoever they have to run it through. And then you have Elon Musk, who finds something on the internet and says it's interesting, and he just says, oh yeah, this is interesting, or yup, or this is horrible, or whatever he says. And people love that authenticity because he's just saying it. He knows he might make a mistake. He knows it might not be perfect. He knows it might make it out, not make it through 15 different committees before they can publish the perfect PR piece, but he just says it. And somehow people gravitate towards that, where you have individuals now that have way, way, way more followers and clout than these organizations who've been around forever, who are so concerned about the image. Talk to me about that. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Well, I think what you're seeing is people are waking up and they're appreciating the freshness, okay, of the approach, the authenticity of the approach, the putting yourself out there of the approach, the contrarianism of the approach, the be different or be deadness of the approach, and basically
I would say
casting.
all different already. We could just, if we just own it, we're already different. We don't have to try as much as sometimes people think, like just be you a little bit, but keep going. I'm sorry.
Well, that's the irony. If you be you in that respect, then by definition, because the rest of the world is benign and mediocre and kind of like a herd mentality. And I don't mean that in a denigrating way, but it is. It's a world of followers, and they read textbooks and they read the same. And so you get somebody that just steps out and introduces discontinuity into that. By definition, they're going to be noticed and they're going to be criticized. And they're going to be different, and if they're relentless, and this is the key thing about this whole taking on this persona, you need to be relentless. You need to have a high tolerance for pain. I discovered a long time ago that pain is probably one of the most key strategic concepts that there is out there. But if you don't have a high tolerance for pain, then forget the journey. And he does. He doesn't show it. But look, he does. You just can't keep doing the stuff. Plus, he's exceedingly brilliant. You can't keep doing the stuff that he's doing without taking it and at least processing it in your cave and then continuing to do something else. All right. That's just what you do. We need, I put him at the the right hand side of the normal distribution curve. Right. So you got the tails of the curve and then the glut in the middle, which is the bell curve, the glut in the middle. describes, 98% or 65, 78% of the world. People do the same thing. They think the same way. They read the same books, et cetera. On the right-hand side, these are the mavericks. These are the crazy people that Steve Jobs takes, here's to the crazy ones. They're out there, right? Most of them, you don't have to do anything with. They're going to keep doing their thing, like Musk, right? On the left-hand side, there's kind of people that they're negative. They don't want to do anything, and they're just kind of sit there waiting to be entitled, et cetera. I keep thinking, if we could shift that middle of the distribution curve 5 points to the right, can you imagine the latent power that we would actually release in the world in terms of business, in terms of the economy, in terms of people's lives? Just 5 points more of being different. Okay, it's not like copying Elon Musk. It's finding your own way to be different in a way people care about. And I want to make this point. Being different isn't narcissism. Because quite frankly, I don't care about the color of your hair. I don't care about your sexual preferences. I don't care about your pronouns. I don't care about the color of your skin. What I care about is I care about what unique things you are doing to satisfy what other people care about. So it's exactly the antithesis of narcissism. So I think if you can move that glut of people in the middle that are just following the herd, if you could move them 5 points, imagine that. Imagine that. Imagine what that would do to the corporate program set that they would start to look at in terms of how to make their companies more humane. How to make them more sensitive to what people desire as opposed to driving. You wouldn't have the corporate profit conversation that long. Okay, you would have people saying, wow, look at what they did to drive growth. Look at what they did to satisfy what people care about and how the shareholders benefited, as opposed to the conversation that goes on right now, which is, they're just all after money and et cetera, and they're egomaniacs, et cetera. And unfortunately, I got to tell you, I think it's a failure on my part. Like, I have not been able to do my part in this. Okay, because it's so hard work, and I wrote my first book in 2009. So do the math. Okay. I've been writing on this stuff, talking about it, doing seminars, et cetera, and it is so hard to get people to kind of shift. I hate the word pivot, by the way, shift, break away from all that past momentum, because they're in an academic traditional straitjacket, and breaking them free of that is so difficult. That's why we need more of these conversations. We need more of guys like you and your colleagues out there beating the bushes. What are you? The next time you get a guest on your show that talks about benchmarking, I want you to shout them down, because that is copying. That's got absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about right now. And if it's an academic, you better believe this will be somebody that will say, well, we need to follow best in class. Yeah, you really? You want to increase the denominator of sameness by one? That's what I hear you saying, because everybody's doing that. I need guys like you saying, hey, that's bullshit, my friend. What has that got to do with standing out in the way that people care about when all you're doing is copying the guy next door? Help me understand what you're going to do differently tomorrow to break and undo what you just said. You need to be a Musk on this and just beat him up.
Yeah. And then you get guys like Musk who are just being themselves, and he knows he's going to be imperfect. And he's got like multiple times the number of followers that like these established news outlets who've been around for decades, and they're worried about how they're going to spin it and how they're going to, make sure the PR is correct and everything else. I love what you said there. You've got to just be how did you say it? Well, you got to be different or be dead, but just be the only one. And really, if you're just being you, that's not that big of a thing, but you got to go and move and be brave and start moving. I love what you've said here. Love it.
Well, the other thing is make sure that you're doing it for the right reason, though. I want to repeat that. Okay, like this isn't just doing it because you want to satisfy the best version of you. Okay, you're doing it to satisfy what others need you to be to satisfy what they care about.
That's
You
right.
get
So we're
me?
not narcissistic about it. We're going out to serve others. Like, who am I serving and what do they crave? Like you were saying. Is that
That's
correct?
it. And then I got to be unique. And how am I
And then
going to be
also,
different in the way to do that?
and
I
then
mean,
also we have to be uncomfortable. Oh, sorry, keep going.
nope. No, I'm just, I mean, and just got to keep beating away at it. We don't have a large enough army of advocates. Okay, we need to grow the base of people that not just think this way, but they actually practice it. And in many respects, it's a leadership issue. I mean, if we had, I
Let's
mean, one
start
of
a
the
movement,
reasons,
boy.
yeah, I know that's true, but I don't know how to do that. I mean, I'm hoping to kind of spread the word a little bit inch by inch, like the things that we're doing right now. But I mean,
We're moving east. We don't know if it's going to be New York or Chicago, but we're
obviously Roy doesn't know what the hell he's
moving,
doing right
right?
now.
I'm joking. Oh.
But no, yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point. But yeah, it's a huge effort. Okay, we need more people heading east
That's
together.
right.
All
That's right.
right, locked arm in arm with the same message, the same narrative. We need our narrative to displace all the marginalized group narratives out there, if you know what I mean. We got so many self-interest groups out there occupying space. We need to occupy that space. We need to create the volume of communication that starts to influence people. It's interesting to me that as soon as Trump opens his mouth, people go crazy. And I keep thinking, are they not hearing this right? I mean, even though people may have different views about his communication style and capabilities, that aside, but if you listen to what he's really saying, it's hard for me to understand that people would disagree with protect the borders, find ways to help people elsewhere in the world, because they immediately go to, well, really, he just wants another resort. I mean, there's all this other stuff. Like, people don't accept that kind of change. When have you ever known anybody to actually initiate so much execution, right, within X days of becoming president of the United States? I can't, and I've been here a long time.
And regardless of how you feel about it, there has been a absolute, as you say, tightening up on execution with relentlessness. And by the way, backing up a little bit just while I'm talking here, just being willing to be uncomfortable, have pain. Pain is a key strategy, as you said. I mean, literally saying, okay, we're going to just go, and it may not be perfect, but we're going, right? And you're
Well,
right. You don't find a whole lot of other people. There's a lot of politicians you almost couldn't distinguish them from each other because they're all trying to make sure that everything's perfect. And then you have some politicians who just say what they think, and it may come out kind of in a way that makes people rub wrong. But they're a category of one, as you said, and they're completely different, and there's nobody else like them, right?
yeah, and the pushback comes from exactly that description. They're not like anybody else, and we as a society have been taught to fit in. We've not been taught to stand out. For some reason, standing out is bad. Okay. I can remember my mother saying, Roy, don't you ever come home and have me find out that the teacher, okay, saw you stand out and do something that caused any disruption, that caused attention to go to you. And so that was just her way of admonishing the even willingness to kind of like, well, yeah, but what about this? And challenge, right? And we're still there. Hail, it's 2025, and we're still a herd. We're still a herd of people that follow, the views of others. And in a business sense, the problem I have is the people that are promulgating, stuff like strategy and marketing, they've never run a billion-dollar-a-year business. Then why the hell are we listening to them? I keep saying, show me somebody who's real. Oh, I know. Because I can talk to you about failures. I can talk to you about being unsuccessful a lot. And it's the route to winning. If you're not failing, I don't know what you're doing, my friend.
Get out there and fail 1,000 times. It reminds me, there was this Michael Jordan commercial years ago, and he says, I was trusted, I don't know, dozens of times to take the winning shot and missed. I was trusted this. He goes, I have failed again and again and again. He talks about his failures. And then he goes at the very end, he goes, And that is why I succeed.
Yeah.
Just fail as fast as you can and keep moving.
Yep. Yep. There's only one admonition I would add to that, though. I used to say, look, I'm into failing, but never make the same mistake twice, because that implies that you didn't learn from the first one. That's not acceptable. That is not acceptable. Make a different mistake, trying something
let's
different.
Fail differently. Right. Let's not do the same thing again.
Fail differently. Oh, you got me. Good one.
You know, the other thing here, too, is, you know, sometimes I'll hear people say, well, that's not normal, as if normal was this like thing we want to set up on a pedestal and say, you know, it's not normal that something's happening, that you're doing this. And my response would be, thank you. What a compliment. Like, let's not be normal, please. I mean, like, but when I hear people say normal as if it's like the end goal. Like, that's not normal. They're not acting normally. That organization is not normal. Well, wonderful. Thank you. Let's stop putting normal on a pedestal. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally. I mean, what it is, I mean, if you're not normal, then basically you're not fitting in. I mean, it's an admonition of and criticism of your behavior, because your behavior doesn't conform. If you're not compliant with the norms of society or business, okay, which you know, get described in many ways. But if you're not compliant, then there's something negative about you. Okay, it's interesting you should raise that. I'm in the middle of writing a rather lengthy blog article, because I publish blog posts every Monday on bedifferentorbedead.com. And this one's about writing a new dictionary for business. And it's actually a slam on the words and phrases that are used in business today, like better, best, number one, best in class, you know, all those business phrases that have been in the lexicon for so many years that they're creating compliance, conformity, blah, blah, blah. So I'm advocating that we create a new dictionary, and I'm outlining some words that should go in that dictionary. And one is unpopular, be different or be dead, contrarianism, excess, all these words that are completely outside of the norm bubble. I want you to be abnormal. I want you to be unpopular. And so there's a whole bunch of words that when you stick un in front of them, they're amazing. So I'm writing it with that in mind. So you may want to...
What's that blog post? Where can you find that blog post, by the way?
Well, that's going to be on my bedifferentorbedead.com. That's my website.
Or bedead.com, and we'll put that in the show notes today.
And I've been, as I say, I've been blogging on this stuff since 2009, so there's lots of resources there for people if they want to go and say, wow, what did he mean by goosebumps? So there's a ton of blog posts on that. And yeah, this one I'm having fun with, you know, because it's just like, yeah, it's like take the bubble and burst the bubble. And at least we got a couple of real life examples in the world these days, you know, that of people who are suffering the pain because they're living what you and I are just talking about and what I lived a few years ago. So I'm glad to see that.
Roy, I love this. This has been a fabulous chat. Tell me, how else can people get a hold of you? It's bedifferentorbedead.com, correct? How else can people get a hold of you if they want to reach out to you?
Well, I do a lot of social media, so you can find that. Just Google me and you'll get all my social media stuff. And if you want them, put them in the show notes. I can send you all the links. But the other thing is my email address is roy.osing@gmail.com. And I'm really happy to have a conversation with anybody on any of this stuff. And it's funny, you know, I get emails from people who would say things like, hey, I heard you on the blah, blah show. And you talked about the only statement. I found that interesting. Here's my draft only statement. What do you think? Here's the business I'm in. Here's my only statement. What do you think? And so we have a conversation about their only statement. Or people will say, hey, could we have a Zoom call on your strategic game planning process? That might be something that I'd be interested in learning more about, or, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so it's just an excellent way to engage. And so I just invite people to take advantage of me, quite frankly, by sending me an email.
That's great. So Roy Osing, and Osing is spelled O-S-I-N-G for those of you who are listening as you drive. Roy.osing@gmail.com, and look him up on social media. Roy, really, really grateful that you'd be on the show today. What an audacious leadership position. What a only kind of thing to have taken something to, you know, how many people can say they've scaled from zero to a billion? And to show you, to share your wealth of knowledge with us today, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I so enjoyed this. And you did a hell of a job. Nice job.
Well, Roy, that means a lot coming from you. Thank you for being on the show today. And thank you all for listening to the Principal Podcast today.